Welcome to another episode of Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. Here we go.
Welcome back to the all sorts
of emotions.
Of emotions episode.
Emotion about cinema, emotion about autism, and now
mental health.
Yeah.
Welcome to part two. It's been a bit of a long one, this.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
We're enjoying it in the way we do. Most podcasting.
So, I just want to do a quick book review, really, about Denise Welsh, and therefore segue onto some of the things that it's taught me, and some of the things that I think it's about time we talk about.
Yeah.
So, Denise Welsh, The Unwelcome Visitor, Depression and How I Survive It. Now, I just want to share with you, before I do anything else, a review that I read on Goodreads prior to finishing this book.
And you can name and shame them because it's on Goodreads.
I can. So, Annette Bishop, who titled her her review as Me, Me, Me. All excuses and self-promotion, alcohol, drugs and self-pity, plus a healthy dose of boring repetition. Every time something was good, she used the excuse of depression, in inverted commas, to ruin it. I've known people like this, controllers. My illness, in quotation marks, my arse, and I paid €9.99 to read that. Now, interestingly, a couple of people have actually replied to her review, basically saying, have some compassion. Sounds like you were unable to see the messages that were clearly stated throughout the book, that depression is crippling and can lead someone to self-medicate. Denise Welsh is somebody that I know of. I had only recently rediscovered her through watching a couple of episodes of Waterloo Road, which, to be fair, wasn't her biggest accomplishment and still isn't her biggest accomplishment acting wise. And I came across the book, you know, going through the aisle as you do in Asda. And I looked at it and I went, actually, I'm going to read that. And I don't do non-fiction and I certainly don't do celebrities.
Especially of the British public eye.
No, and I just, and to me personally,
before, they fit a certain stereotype.
Yeah, before I read this book, I thought, oh, here's another book that's me, 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 because that's what non-fiction books by different celebrities feels. That's how they feel to me. Mm. It's just like, oh yeah, let's hear all about your such a tough life, being really rich.
Yeah,
and that is really quite narrow-minded of me.
But it's not just narrow-minded in the sense, it's just a stigma that's perpetuated by
it is
the type of material published, sadly.
However,
I didn't get that feeling when I looked at Denise's book, though, to be honest.
No.
Because I was aware of her depressive.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of anything. I wasn't aware of anything at all. I know she's on Loose Women.
Yeah.
I know she's been in Waterloo Road. It's about the only things I know she's done.
Yeah.
Till I read this book. Now, I can understand why somebody said that it's repetitious, because it is. Because she continuously refers to her depression as my depression, or the unwelcome visitor, or the visitor. And there are times where I think if I read the word depression any more times, it's going to no longer make any sense. But you need it to give the bigger picture. This book is about a woman who has suffered with depression since having her first child, looking at her son and wishing she loved him more than she does.
Mm-hmm.
And that is awful and not something I can relate to, because I don't have any children.
Yeah.
So therefore haven't suffered any form of pre, post, antenatal depression.
Is that pre?
Prenatal depression, yeah. And she'd never experienced any form of depression up until she'd had Matthew. So, for her, that must have been really, really difficult. And since then, she has suffered really quite badly. And yes, she has self-medicated, mainly with alcohol. Cocaine was only actually found out because she entrusted... No, she didn't even entrust someone. A journalist decided to befriend her and take advantage of her, called her up one day and said, come to this party next week. And she went, yeah, okay, I'm not busy, I'll try my best to get there. And she went, oh, just to let you know, there's going to be cocaine usage at this party. Is that all right with you?
And Denise
turned around and went, oh, don't worry, that's fine. No harm, no foul just yet. So then she said, have you used it before? She went, yeah, I have done in the past. Again, I'm still sitting there thinking, no harm, no foul. We've all made mistakes. Until this woman turns around and she says, oh, I don't suppose you could get any for me, could you? And that's where Denise, unfortunately, turns around and says, actually, I've got a couple of people I could call and find out if I can get some for you. Yeah, sure.
She could have been full of hot air, or she could generally be in confidence, feel entrusted that
that's
she could.
That's the only reason why anybody found out about her cocaine use.
Yeah.
Not because she was lying on the streets, clearly buzzing from cocaine use, or because she's been found with cocaine. No, because she once told a journalist who was undercover that she may be able to find some cocaine for her for use at her party.
Yeah.
That is frustrating. And I understand from a mental health point of view why you feel that you would need to self-medicate to make things feel better. In whatever way you feel that that is best.
Yeah.
And her alcoholism up until 8 years ago was really quite serious. And something that she excused by saying, I'm not a day drinker, I only drink in the evening. Yes, you may only drink in the evening, but it's the amount you are drinking said evening that is the problem.
It's the adage of, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm drink dependent.
She didn't even think that, though.
She's not.
As far as she was concerned, if I'm not a day drinker, I'm not an alcoholic.
Okay.
And it wasn't actually until her current husband recorded the way she acted one night due to her drinking and her going, oh my God, I had no idea, for her to kickstart and realise that actually she should
stop. Did she go into detail what she was?
What do you mean?
What she was doing.
Mm. She just mentions aggression and throwing china and stuff like that. Anyway, this book for me is a 5-star read, and the review I wrote on Goodreads is, what an absolute inspiration. I would read this over and over again on good days and bad. Thank you, Denise Welsh. It's something that, although I haven't, like I said, suffered with any form of postnatal, prenatal, antenatal depression, I have suffered with depression, and actually some parts of it I looked at it and thought, thank God I haven't been that bad.
Yeah.
And other parts of it I thought to myself, I've been there.
Mm.
And actually the way you dealt with it isn't the way I would have dealt with it, in both good ways and bad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have dealt with I haven't and wouldn't deal with any form of depression with self-medication, with things such as illegal drugs and alcoholism. But then there are other things that some of her coping mechanisms that are more positive that I now feel that I could possibly use in the future to help me. So it's a fantastic book. And the thing is she's not the best writer.
No.
But you don't have to
doesn't
be to
need
share
to
that.
Be. When it comes to telling a story and the what weight and purpose it has behind it, that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
She doesn't need to be a prose literary type.
No, she doesn't. And actually it made it easier for me to read it, as if somebody's just like thrown it on a bit
of
paper.
You read it really quickly.
Yeah, I did read it really quickly, but I think it's because it was more human. Somehow, sometimes when you write a book and you've got so many things to follow, so many stories to follow, so many subplots.
That's true, and not even just that. Even if you're reading a faux pas character who's going through this such things in a fictional book, it's all woo! Like, I'm working on a book at the moment by a guy called Trevor W. Norrington called Words Make No Sense. And the funny thing about his is, every time he goes into the biographical elements of his life, he just undercuts it with, like, some, like, joke, or he just literally just, like, murders it with whimsy and madness and imagination, whereas... Mm. You know, it infuses something. But when it comes to being on a fictive level, sometimes it's protracted. And Trevor said to me personally, he went, it's boring if I don't mess it up a bit. So, but fiction, in a long way, what I'm getting at is, sometimes it takes 400 pages to get to that last page.
To get to your point.
Whereas on a level that then... Denise is writing, and a lot of people have, even I got to give it to him, Russell Brand, talking about his own addiction in his book, My Bookie Work. It's It's enlightening. And it's necessary.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
And sometimes you don't need all that. Look at me, I use big words to get to it. Which Russell Brand results in doing now. You absolute... Beep, 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 beep. Now, the mental health angle of it all
is something that I wanted to talk about because it's something that I haven't yet spoken about and something that has come to light quite recently with a family member and their struggles. And I began sharing information that I don't think I've shared with many people in my life, bar about two. And that is around feelings of self-harm and actions of self-harm and feelings of suicide. And planning attempted suicide.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think a lot of people talk about, but don't hit any of the right nails.
No, never.
It's kind of like... You can imagine having a block of wood with a bunch of nails halfway through and you've got your blindfold over your eyes and you're just hammering, hoping that you might hit one of those nails on the head.
Yeah.
And nobody quite hits the mark. And I'm not going to say that I'm going to sit and hit the mark.
And you're ultimately bending those fucking nails.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not going to say that I'm sitting here saying, oh, I'm going to hit the nail on the head and everything's going to be perfect, because it's not. But something that I think needs to be... What?
No, it's just, it's an enlightenment moment, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, something that I think just needs to be shared is the fact that this is such a raw thing.
Yeah.
And it is so incredibly different from one person to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've learned through my childhood and I've watched since through various people in my life, past and present, around the need to be depressed for some reason.
Mm.
And what that depression actually brings them and how it benefits them in that moment.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people, including myself, need to be depressed at times to feel listened to feel loved, to feel wanted. And also there is, and this is probably very controversial, there is something... comfortable for me in depression. Although I don't like it, there is something about it that feels more
normal for yourself.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
Something that is there that's almost like, ah, it's you again.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there are times in my life personally where I have had so many depressive episodes with so little highs that when I come out of it, I'm actually more scared of how long I'm going to be high before I come back down than I was of being in it.
Mm.
Yeah. And I used to refer to it as a roller coaster that I couldn't see. Because you go up and up and up and up and up, but you don't know how long you're going to be going up for.
No.
Before you plummet back down. And the thing I hate the most about depression is the plummet. Once I'm there, it becomes... it takes a couple of days, but you kind of get into the flow. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But when you plummet in, you don't know how fast you're going to go, and you don't know how far you're going to go.
And you don't know if you're going to... What type of impact you're going to have.
Exactly. And it is. It's one of those things of like fear of falling.
Yeah.
I like being happy.
Yeah.
I like being up. But I hate that constant fear of how long until I drop.
Yeah.
And if I keep going up, it's going to be a faster and harder drop than it is if I stay at the bottom.
Yeah.
And that is something that a lot of people look at me like cross-eyed. Like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean you like being depressed? No, let me get this straight. I do not like being depressed. But sometimes when you've been in it for a while and you know how it works, it is more comfortable than it is doing this high-low thing, because I don't like the drop. Now, I'm not saying that this is anything to do with what Denise is saying, because it's just sparked the conversation in me.
Yeah, we're way past the stages of reviewing Denise's book. Absolutely.
So what I'm saying really is, yes, I have read the book and it has now influenced... feelings in me that I hadn't necessarily realised.
It's let you recognise that it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing. I've read it and I appreciate where she comes from and I really enjoyed it, but it's given me the chance now to talk about it in my my views. And yeah, for me, the fall, that plummet, is harder than being in it. And I think the worst thing for me sometimes is that I get these moments where I'm falling, but slowly.
Mm.
And I feel like I fall further when it's slow than when I plummet.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm scared. I'm not scared when I'm in it. I can usually cope when I'm in it. But the plummet, that fall, I don't like. It scares me. Yeah. And I think the thing is there's... I think there's also part of me, because a lot of people say that when they're depressed they can't feel anything. I often feel the most when I'm depressed. You feel too much. Well, yeah, sometimes. But I feel more when I'm depressed than I do when I'm not. Whereas a lot of people say that they don't feel anything. They feel numb. They feel that their brain is empty. They feel they're just surrounded by blackness. And for me, I feel and I think the most.
I like that because that's when it numbs the more hyperactive side of it. When depression comes in the form of anxieties, and in a lot of ways it's not even depression, it's just mental health with intrusive thoughts and manic ideas and obsessive compulsion, I would much prefer be down in the dumps and low and simmering in a whole myriad of emotion where I think about certain things, emotional, that aren't interrelated to my mental health. The depression is a lot related to agonies and hurt, not inflicted onto oneself through mental health, but a lot of the time, and when I do go for those emotions, I'm like, please, if I'm having a good day, bad day, and this flare-up is continuing, you think it's flaring up, and you think, if the end result is going to be, I'm going to be on rock bottom, or I'm going to fall, I want it. I'm really willing it on. I'm like, there's got to be a point behind this manic period. There's got to be a moment behind this. Is this leading to that plummet from the roller coaster? Mm. So, like in a lot of way with your analogy, your beautiful one, the intrusive thoughts and the obsessive compulsive stuff is me going up. It's getting you ready, and it's jarring you. I'm not in a way, it's not I'm excited, but I'm willing for that plummet. Yeah. And a lot of the time, the plummet doesn't come. I don't hit rock bottom. It kind of fizzles out or something else occupies my mind. Whereas I used to be in deep, dark, depressive states when I was younger. And when I was in deep, dark, depressive states, it became the norm for me and I was comfortable in it. Mm-hmm. A lot of my greatest work that I've written was in those states. That's where my mind was able to slow down for a change. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, I miss it. I miss those moments. At the moment in my life, of my mental health, it's less about dark, depressive moods, and it's more to do with the obsessive, compulsive, autistic nature of things. There is a complacency in depression. There's no denying that. Is it right to feel that you much prefer that? I'd say it's the best of all the fucking evils for me, because though it hurts when you're going through it, it really hurts. You need that hurt to grow. And also, it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to...
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think also, being depressed for me gives me an opportunity to actually finally open up.
Yeah.
And I find it very difficult when somebody says to me, okay, so talk to me about X, Y and Z. If I'm having a really good day, I find it really difficult to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm having a good day. I'm not upset. I'm not feeling those feelings. I'm not depressed.
Mm.
But when I'm in that depressive mode, that feeling, I actually find it a lot easier to talk at that time.
Yeah.
Because I'm feeling it right now.
Mm.
And a lot of the time, although I am totally compos mentis and I'm alive and I'm awake, when somebody says to me, think back to last week when you were feeling in that really low mood, how did you feel? I can't bloody remember.
Yeah.
So actually, a lot of my times where I'm depressed is the time that I talk the most about my feelings, about both the but you know
it's snowballed.
And I think the thing is as well is it's something really really something that people should absolutely remember and know if they don't already know, is that there are two types of depression. There are depressions that are caused by events, traumatic events. For example, your father dies, your mother dies, a close family member dies, somebody that you love dies, or somebody has been diagnosed with cancer, something that is physically, emotional and traumatic. And then there is the chemical imbalance in your brain, hormonal imbalances. There are two different types of depression. And something that I will just quickly flip back to Denise's book is something that she said to this woman on Loose Women one day. She said, okay, you're feeling depressed, I'm feeling depressed too. However, you're feeling depressed because your father has been diagnosed with a terminal illness. She said to this woman, if tonight you went home and you were told by the doctor that he has this new injection that would cure your father from tomorrow, she said, would you still be depressed tomorrow when you know your father's not going to die? No, of course I wouldn't. And she went, stop there. There's the difference between chemical imbalance and traumatic caused, is that when you have a chemical imbalance, no matter whether my dad's dying or not, I'm still depressed. If he was cured, I'm still depressed. I'm happy that my dad's not dying, but I'm still depressed. For you, it's traumatic. It's caused by trauma.
That's so beautifully put.
It is. It's absolutely spot on. Is that if you were to find that your dad was not going to die because he'd been cured, you would no longer feel these low mood feelings. And this is the thing.
She's got a marked event, isn't it?
And that wasn't her way of saying mine's worse than yours.
No, not at all. No. People can horribly say
that. Absolutely can. But what it actually shows is that there are two different types of depression, and it is really, really easy to turn around to somebody with depression and the age-old saying, "What have you got to be depressed about?"
My father said that to me once. Someone himself who struggled with mental health. And it's
what have you got to be depressed about? I'm like, sorry?
No, and this is the problem with some people with mental health. They can't quite compute that you're going through something probably as tough as them.
And I still find difficult to this day when I'm at work with friends, socialising. And I say, actually, I'm really quite low at the moment. And they go, oh, why is that? And I always, it's wrong, I know, but I always go, oh, well, you know, I've just been thinking about my dad a lot recently. And, you know, as you know, he died. I fall on that. Because it's much easier to validate it with the trauma of losing my father.
That will tick
yeah.
for them.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense. Not that it'll make sense that she suffers from depression.
It makes sense that she's depressed because her dad died.
Yeah.
And she's upset about
it. But it won't make sense that you're depressed because you have depression.
No.
It's weird, isn't
and
it?
And it is very difficult because, and we've had these conversations between us, haven't we? It's like, well, tell me what you're feeling. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel. I don't know what it is that is making me feel this way, so therefore it's not caused by trauma. We've both gone, I don't know how I feel, I don't know how to explain it, I just feel really crap.
Yeah.
I feel really low, I feel really depressed. And this is the thing, is that it is so incredibly difficult sometimes to explain why you feel the way you do, or even how the way you feel.
Yeah.
Because actually it's in your head and you feel like you're under this cloud, but for some reason you still can't explain the actual, you know, you've got all these emotions, anxiety, fear, happiness, sadness, but somehow depression doesn't have any words associated to it. There are lots of words that psychotherapists and psychiatrists associate with the word depression.
Yeah.
But somehow, and we've both had this, we can be in a depressive episode and we don't know what words to use in tandem with it to make sense.
What are you upset about? I'm not upset about anything. What's bothering you? I'm not bothered by anything. But I feel really fucking down.
And that's the thing, is you can't always, when you're feeling in that,
you can't do that, even that.
No, but sometimes if you can say I'm feeling really bad or I'm feeling really low.
Yeah.
But you still can't find those words to describe in what way.
Yeah.
Not what's caused it, but what feeling. Because the thing is, depression isn't an emotion.
No.
It's a state.
Yeah.
The words of emotion are like fear and anxiety, happy, sad, scared. You know,
I'm in a depressed state. Yeah, it's...
But there's no emotive words that work in tandem a lot of the time with that depression, that depressive state.
Yeah. You should write a book, my gorgeous girl.
But it is, it's so hard sometimes. They go, well, how are you feeling? And I'm just as bad. When I'm happy and you're sad, sorry, that's the worst thing to say. When I'm feeling good and you're feeling low, I'm saying to you, how are you feeling? You're like, I don't fucking know. And I'm like, yeah, because I'd say the same bloody thing. But we still, as humans, even though sometimes we don't mean it, there are some people that say it because they're just arseholes. But there are other people that say these things. It's like, I don't mean to sound like a dick, but it's like human response.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times with depression, it's somebody else's problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's how they tackle it.
Yeah.
They may put on that facade of, I'm here for you, but it's your problem.
It's a bit like being an auntie to a child.
Mm.
So yeah, you have your child, I'll babysit, but I give it back.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yes.
It's exactly the
yes,
same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here for you, but it's your fucking problem, bye.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And it's very easy for somebody like me, and probably you too, we're quite empathetic, is to get bogged down by other people's depression.
Oh, definitely.
And something that we've experienced between us, I think, when you're down, I tend to go down 2 days later,
yeah.
And vice versa. Because it's almost like I think part of me... personally is when you're down I feel like I've been super up to try and like counter
balance it, yeah, and then there's
and then
also
I,
that
I drop,
well that's that feeling of personal failure for your partner,
yeah, yeah. And it's also
when it's not the case at
no.
all.
And there's also an element that we've both discussed at times that if you're depressed you're not happy, so you're not happy with me.
Yeah,
that is something we've got over quickly and very early on. We have to.
Because we are both mental
prone.
Health sufferers,
yeah.
And we are prone to
yeah.
depressive states. Mm. We are prone to episodes. We are prone to moments. We had a moment the other day, which was very personally related, and that's got a load of myriad things behind it. It's the autism. It's also the mental health. It's also past experiences and current experiences. The best thing to do is always to communicate. But sometimes the uncommunicable, isn't it, is uncommunicable.
Sometimes you can't. You can't explain it. You can't justify it. You can't excuse it. You can't say anything that makes any sense. Sometimes you can't even make... You can't even think straight, let alone say something in the right way.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. And you do, as a partner to somebody that suffers with mental health, and this is what I find really interesting, because if I didn't suffer from mental health and you did, I think I would feel much worse. Because I'd constantly feel like I was just failing you as a
yeah.
partner. Because you're always depressed. That's how it would feel to me, I think, if I wasn't.
Well, you,
if I didn't suffer from mental health.
When I had my first deep downward spiral... It was. You were very emotional. You were very, I don't know what to do. What can make this better? And that was the early stages or halfway stages through the lockdown, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you were trying so hard to try and pinpoint it. And you were like, I'll buy you books. I'll buy you Blu-rays. I'll try and make this more like your home environment. And it's just like...
But I think from... Sorry, Karen.
No, it's just like... I was like, I appreciate you so much for doing this and recognising that could be it, because usually it does, so... because my stimulus and my distraction to everything that goes on in my head is books and films. Not just watching or reading, but the whole connotation of buying them, reviewing them. It's, a lot of people don't realise that there's a real emptiness in my life, and I've been filling it up with books and Blu-rays. But since I've met you... You filled that gap, but I'd still like Blu-rays and books.
Oh, come on, it's not like a romantic podcast.
But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And like, I couldn't communicate to you that, no, you just being here and being able to see
yeah.
it, like, is enough for me.
But from my perspective, in that circumstance, it wasn't about, it may come across very easily about it looking like I was trying to fix the problem.
Mm.
But for me, I know that, you know, we were in the middle of lockdown, COVID-19 lockdown. I couldn't get you home.
No.
And I think for me, what I wanted to do was, although I couldn't fix the depression, I could try and make effectively small wins just to make it a little easier for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is a lot of people try and fix depression, don't they?
Yeah.
I'll get you a coffee. Buy some flowers. I will get you some chocolate. We'll watch a sad film.
I mean, minor gestures like that sometimes do
they cheer you up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think for me, what I was trying to do on, you know, on, at that time, and I think we actually ended up arguing about it because we'd misunderstood each other, was that for me, I know that when I'm in my deepest and darkest times, I need to be at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that for you.
Because of the lockdown.
Because of the lockdown. So the only thing I could do was try and make this...
my home.
Yeah. ...as home as possible.
Yeah.
To make it a little more secure for you, if you like. But I think that's the thing, is people do. They do try and fix. And even I sometimes, I still want to fix. I want to fix. Of course I want.
Mm.
I want to be able to fix you. I want to be able to fix myself.
Mm.
Because I ultimately do not like seeing anybody hurt.
Mm.
No matter who they are, what they do, and who they are to me, I don't want to see people hurt.
No.
And that's the thing, is as humans, we are good at trying to find a fix. As Brits, we are renowned for making a cup of tea because it makes it feel better.
Yeah, have a cup of tea. Have a fag.
We'll have a cup of tea, and it'll be fine.
Yes, it's a reprieve, but it won't fix it.
No.
There's certain stages of help, self-help, that you've expressed has worked, counselling.
Yeah. So, man, this is going to sound like I'm going to preach for the next, like, 5 minutes.
Do it.
No, I don't want to preach.
Not preach, but it's coming from you, personally. It's...
okay.
It's necessary. Don't see it like that, because it isn't that.
No. The basics of this, my mum trained as a counsellor and a hypnotherapist and a psychotherapist when I was knee-high to a grasshopper, shortly after her and my father got divorced. That is something that I hated every day for the entirety of my teenage life.
Mm.
Because it was like, just everything was just... it just felt like mum was using her counselling techniques to help me with my depression. It's so annoying. And even now, in my early 20s, when she says something sometimes, I'm like, please don't counsel me. Please don't psychoanalyse me. I'll tell you when I want to psychoanalyse a situation in my life, but please don't do it without my permission. Because it's kind of like an automatic thing with most counsellors. They don't know how... yeah, but they don't know how to distinguish between normal life and counselling life, because it's just like an ingrained thing. It's a bit like driving. You don't drive consciously. You drive subconsciously. I nearly said unconsciously then.
Please, we do not recommend that. Or unconsciously. Or subconsciously.
But... counselling is like a subconscious thing. It's just always there in your head when you've been trained.
Yeah.
So it's something that... it's a bit like being a police officer.
Yeah.
If you see somebody being stabbed in the street and you're a police officer, you're not just going to walk away, are you?
They might join in, depending what state you live in.
But that's my point, is the fact that that was very frustrating for me. But I was very lucky to experience somebody who is... just the most wonderful woman, and still is to this day, the most wonderful and inspirational woman. And she is now living out in Australia with her three little boys. I say little, I think the oldest one is way too old to be little now. And her husband, and she's doing all sorts of inspirational things. But she helped me with some deep-rooted issues with my dad. Way, way, way when I was a lot younger than... any form of intervention with CAMS and everything like that, which is counselling and mental health awareness support
service. I wouldn't know the breakdown. I was just calling fucking useless.
I can't. So yeah, I experienced therapy effectively from a very young age, and then something that I went on to later on was CAMS, which is a service that is used across the UK for...
Was used. That was a question mark as well, because
for
I...
for children that suffer with mental health issues at school.
Summarise?
There are now different things in place.
Okay.
But CAMS was effectively the thing that was used mostly.
The only thing there.
The only thing available, basically.
It was centred generally young people of a certain age.
Young people of a certain age for all mental health issues. Now they're only used for serious issues. So something that I accessed when I was younger. But for me, unfortunately, the problem I had... is that the place I had to go to in order to receive the therapy was right outside my school. And school was most of the problem that I was having and the reason why I had mental health issues. So I could see through the window whilst talking to my psychologist all of the people that were bullying me that I was bitching about.
That's really strange, because when I went to CAMHS, the whole issue was centred around a certain friendship group in Helsham. And when I went to CAMHS there, I was like, I don't want to come here, because no, all the people I've got issue with, this is their stomping ground.
So the reason why I didn't get on with them, there are a number of reasons. I don't think I was ready.
That as well.
There were a lot of things, but one of the most participating factors was purely because I was watching those people that I had problems with that were causing a lot of my mental health issues and my insecurities were walking past that window.
I was
constantly looking like, who's watching me, who's watching me, who's watching me? And that means you don't have a comfortable
space. How young was this? Teenage or younger?
Teenage.
I went through the process since I was very young, because they really couldn't hit the nail on the head whether I was autistic or not. Should have recognised. As I got older, I started conveying the sense that I was a drug user and a party animal. That's why I was so up and down as a person. They sucked that up like, oh yeah, this is what we want to hear. Where I was in denial about it all. The service didn't offer anything but somewhere to go for an hour and a half. And yeah, but the thing is, what I'm actually saying is, it's you. I went there for a myriad of reasons. I wanted to diagnose me. They couldn't diagnose me. Went again, couldn't diagnose me. Went there because of mental health. Couldn't diagnose me even then. And then it's a perpetuation onto itself. I think you've got to want it. That's what I'm trying to get at.
You have, and
when it's young, you can't.
Something that I've learned over the years by both accessing something called Health in Mind, which is a free NHS counselling service, which helped for a small amount of time, but I realised again I wasn't focusing on the issues I needed to be focusing on. Then went to see a private hypnotherapist to try and help me. That didn't work. Why? Because I didn't want it to.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, there was something comfortable about being in that depression and that state of mind. And then finally, I broke through. And I mean, this was only 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I found the right counsellor at the right time, in a position where I was ready to deal with the things that I haven't previously wanted to deal with, and it worked.
Yeah.
I can't turn around to anyone and say, go to counselling, everything will be fine. Because I have seen my counsellor on and off for the last 3 years, and 2 years, and I am much better. My depression hasn't gone away.
No.
I'm not cured.
No.
But what it has helped me to realise is that the feelings I'm feeling when I'm depressed are okay.
Mm.
And it has helped me to figure out where some of my pressure points are, where my big red buttons are, and when somebody pushes them, this is how I react and this is how I could react, and actually trying to make that into more of a Venn diagram. For anybody who doesn't know what a Venn diagram is, that's two circles that intertwine. And actually finding your middle ground.
Yeah.
And you know me, I like my analogies, I have to picture things. Yeah. Finding that middle ground that means that you don't react like a total asshole and you don't go into yourself and you find that middle ground of reacting the best way you can. And that's really helped me. And something else that's helped me is actually to grieve the loss of my dad more than anything, is the fact that there are so many different things that I won't go into, because this will be the longest podcast on the history of podcasts. But
I think we should do an episode though, because I think that could help one day.
Maybe.
The cliched daddy issue topic.
Yeah. But, you know,
which I've got. I've got daddy issues.
But, yeah, basically for me, it's about accepting the ways that how I feel about my dad and how I feel about his death, and how they can both be okay despite the fact they are polar opposites.
Yeah.
And it has made me more accepting of a lot of things. Mm. A lot of things.
And but basically making, in the wake of perhaps his death as well, making them answerable to certain aspects to your depression.
Yeah, there are some things that are trauma related when it comes to my depression, and if they hadn't have happened, then I wouldn't be as depressed as I am. Maybe, maybe not. Yeah. It's difficult to tell because if they're past things, like you said, daddy issues.
But not in that derogatory sense, because it does get thrown out as...
It does, and I think I agree. We'll go into something like that later in another podcast.
I think it'd be interesting. Unnecessary for our audience, I think.
Yeah. But the thing I can't stress enough is that if you don't want to see a counsellor, don't bother yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend it
mm-hmm.
in the sense of it can really help you to look at yourself. And I'm very self-reflective.
Yeah.
I'm very good at looking at myself and realising where I've gone wrong, where I think I'm right, and looking at that and weighing up and evaluating. I'm an evaluator. I'm very good at evaluating different things.
Yeah.
So for me, it's very easy to walk into a counsellor's office and go, right, okay, these are my problems, and these are why I think they're my problems, and this is what I want you to do to help me. And they're like, great, let's get going.
Right, let me get my pen.
Whereas a lot of people walk into a counsellor's office and they go, I'm really sad.
Mm.
And it's really difficult to get, but it's like trying to get blood out of a stone, because people expect a counsellor to just go, oh, well, to just let
you know. They cliched on the chaise lounge.
So,
what is it that I can extract from your mind?
And this is the thing, a lot of counsellors are renowned for saying things like, and how does that make you feel, Zach? Which is the most condescending sentence I've ever heard in my life, and I don't think I've ever heard a counsellor say it.
Mm.
But the thing is they're renowned for saying things like that. Why? Because somebody must have said it at some point.
Oh, no, yeah. That one person.
Yeah, but the thing is I've never heard that. And it doesn't have to work that way. Well, it doesn't.
You walk in there and you anticipate it, and I got pissed off because they never asked me it.
But that's the thing. If you find the right person, I truly believe it can help some people. Some people it can't, but you have to be ready and you have to be in the right place to do it. But I cannot stress enough how important it is to talk, even if it's not to a counsellor. Talking therapy, you know, when doctors refer to talking therapy, it's not necessarily to a paid professional. Sometimes talking therapy is enough to be talking to your partner, or your parents, your family, somebody that you know that you can trust.
Mm.
And that's the thing, is a lot of people have a lot of issues, and this is where I struggle. With a paid professional that is private, it's very easy to take your time, as long as you've got the money to do it.
Yeah.
With an NHS referral, you've got 8 weeks, you've got 8 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me the first 5 to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've only got 3.
Mm-hmm.
They want to spend the last one wrapping up.
Yeah.
So I've got 2 sessions that are wrapping
up. So, where have you evolved from meeting me? I ain't gone fucking nowhere, and that's not how you should approach it.
But that's all the NHS can afford.
And that's their methodology. And you understand it. Because they're stretched very fucking thin.
Yeah,
and there's ever so much they can do.
Exactly.
And when they get to that last day, it is a fucking... It is scurrying like, okay, let's get all this paper together.
Wrap it up, staple
wrap
it
up.
Off you go.
Here's your meds. Boom. And
yeah,
that's
don't give meds, but yeah.
What, you know what I mean. It's that focus of... Have I done enough to warrant you having been here 7 times.
It's not that, though. It's, have I got enough to write a meaty enough discharge letter?
Well, that as well.
But this is the thing. If you can, I'd recommend going to a paid professional that you pay,
private.
Because then you can choose. I can't
it's
stress
enough.
It's not
a criticism
enough.
On NHS in
no,
any way.
No, it's not. It's just the fact that I personally find it easier that way.
Yeah.
But I've been lucky enough to recently, over the last couple of years, have the funds to do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't do that, and I do appreciate that. But the thing I will say is that if you're spending £40 over a month going out on the lash with your mates...
Mm. And not actually dealing with your inherent...
Over talking to a paid professional, just go and see.
Well,
a lot of people are.
Yay, mate, come out, get on the fucking lash, I'll take your mind off it. You think it might, but it won't.
A lot of people have no money.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But a lot of people say they have no money when in fact they spend £100 on a Friday night out.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm saying, think about your life. If you can, look at your lifestyle, look at what you could potentially cut out. Even if it's for 9 months, a temporary arrangement, that you cut something out for a short period of time
yeah.
to help you mentally. Because when all is said and done, your brain is going to be with you for the rest of your life, as is your liver.
Yeah.
Help one of them at least.
Yeah.
And actually, technically speaking, if you're going out on the lash every Friday night and you could be spending that on a counsellor, you're saving your liver and you're helping your brain. Win-win.
Win-win. And we're wrapping up on that subject then. I think that's beautifully put. And if anyone wishes to reach out and they need a kind ear,
let me know.
Let Laura know. If you get hold of me, you'll probably have your ear chewed off about the philosophy of expression through art about mental health.
Don't contact Zach, just message me.
Yeah. Wrap this up with a very rapid fire review for I Am Phenomenal.
That was the worst impression I've ever heard.
Eminem! About the door,
meant to be Eminem?
Yeah.
That was awful. And it's now he's even doing that, like, rapper crossing your arm thing.
It's better than... I'm a terminal, I've got a tape while I'm on you, now I'm let the devil in, but I've got a tape in.
We're going to do a quick review of Southpaw.
Get off! Sorry.
Zach is freaking out over a mosquito. Okay, Southpaw... Go.
5 stars.
How many stars did I give it when we watched it? I'm pretty sure I gave it 4. Now, I struggle with this film because, and the only reason why I struggled is because the day we started watching it, I was in bits, wasn't I?
Naturally, over your back.
Actually, physically in bits. I could not sit still.
It was as if Jake Gyllenhaal had reached out of the screen in the form of the boxer and beat the shit out of you. And
snapped my back, yeah. Yeah.
It was as if you got shot in the spine.
It was awful. I was in so much pain, I couldn't concentrate. Then I ended up crying, I think. Yeah. I was just a mess. And
then we spent almost a week away at mine.
Yeah, so we watched one half and then a week later watched the other half. So it was a little bit protracted. However,
it is phenomenal.
It made me cry.
It's beautiful.
It's so lovely, and it's such a good, it's just such a good movie to acknowledge.
It ain't a sports film, boxing film. I want to make that quite clear.
No, it's not. It's a film that is, stop biting your knuckles, young man.
This is the first time I've done it. No, I haven't done my nasty,
You have twice, and it's not the first time you've been biting your knuckles. I just didn't mention it. Now I am. Anyway,
I bite my knuckles because it's stimming, and Laura
absolutely
has to tell me
not.
Off.
Absolutely not. It's not an excuse.
No, I'm not excusing.
Do something else.
I'm explaining it to them.
Do something else.
I'll do you in a minute. Well, premises.
I'm going to hit this man, right? And this is going to be the last thing you ever hear of him. It's a fantastic story about grief, about family, mm-hmm. about dad stepping up, despite the fact he's this big, hard man, actually stepping up and being there for his kid. And the pain, but the love that's there, and it's just so beautifully done. I don't like these kind of sports type movies, and I hate boxing. I disagree with it. I just don't like boxing because it just seems silly to me. A lot of sport I disagree with. I know it's entertaining.
Me too.
But the thing is it's just like you get paid so much money to do sweet FA.
Uh-huh.
And it is
FA fuck all.
It's super frustrating. So I do struggle with these kind of things.
Boxing films are relatively always emotionally driven and great.
True. But, yeah, saying that, I did really enjoy Southpaw. Jake Gyllenhaal, however you want to say it, I love him.
If Eminem played that role, I mean, it
would... I would not be interested. It would be a 2-star film.
There was a whole fucking thing of Eminem was... This was meant to be a project for him. He was meant to... A starring vehicle so long after his debut in 8 Mile. Mm. That's why his presence is so felt in the soundtrack. And he actually... Marshall Mathers...
Yeah.
Decided, look, I can't get into shape for it. I haven't got the talent as an actor for it. Which he was basically saying, but I'd be more than happy to leave my imprint as a musician. And I think that was very, very...
I like it. It fits well. It fits nicely.
And Gyllenhaal, why he wasn't recognised. And a lot of people, again, have turned him into a mockery because he is such a character actor. He goes out there. I love it. I loved all of it. The young actress who plays his daughter. The relationship between him and... What?
Was the fact that we didn't have to see McAdams that much.
Rachel McAdams, of whom I detest as an actress.
I don't detest her, she's just not my favourite, and I'm just quite glad that she wasn't in much of it.
Yeah, I don't like her that much as an actress, or... Not a personality, it's just her she just...
See, the thing is, for me, I don't have any loyalties towards particular actors or actresses. For me, it's just the fact that some of them tick boxes and some of them don't.
That's what I mean. I haven't got any law. I'm not going to watch.
I'm not going to sit here. Sorry. I'm not going to sit here and shit on someone because they're a shit this or they're a shit that. I'm just saying Rachel McAdams, along with other actors and actresses, don't tick my boxes.
That's what I'm,
for whatever reason.
That's what I mean. I've never gravitated towards her in the sense. The only time that it's pricked my ears up was probably The Notebook.
I mean, you can't deny her in that.
Sherlock Holmes 1, and I was at an age where any woman that was pretty, I was like, pretty lady. But as I've matured,
imagine that.
She doesn't do it for me as an actress either. I think that you could replace her with any other type actress. But I still give this film 5 stars. Anton Fuqua is a great director, black director, very prominent in Hollywood. And he always lends a certain masculine quality to it. But also, what people don't realise is they've recognised him as this masculine action director. Well, this film's of heart.
Mm. And it is very emotional, given the fact that it's meant to be big, hard men doing boxing, punching each other in face. It is very emotional.
Forrest Whitaker as his...
I love Forrest Whitaker! It's amazing. He's just so lovely.
Great actor as well.
I just want to, like, eat his cheeks.
Yes! Actually, kissable cheeks. He would not be safe around me.
No, he wouldn't be safe around me.
He'd be like, hello, young man, nice to meet you. And I'd be like, you have to go, I'm sorry, he's half French.
I just love him. But yeah, anyway,
Watch it if you're a fan of boxing films. Watch it if you're a fan of drama.
Watch it if you want to see the sculpted
body of Gyllenhaal, of whom... Oh my fucking god. Oh, open up those bum cheeks and starfish my face, motherfucker.
It's a wonderful film. It's just great for anybody to watch. Whether it's escapism or something that really interests you, just do it.
It touched us. There. We're going to wrap up now. Oh, Laura, baby. It's been emotional. This is all sorts of emotions. The emotion of returning to the cinema. The emotion of... people reacting really badly to Russell Crowe. In fact, the emotion of living with autism, the reality of autism, the emotion of mental health and the types of conversations that can be opened by a book by Denise Welsh, the emotion garnered from Southpaw. I think this is all sorts of all of them. This is those little dotted licorice things that aren't licorice in the all sorts packet. No?
I hate licorice all sorts.
I can't go anywhere near Laura if I've eaten licorice.
I literally gag continuously until he no longer smells of licorice. It's true. Anyway, it's been a wonderful 3 hours. Nearly.
Virgin.
It's a bye from me.
And it is a goodbye from me.
Thank you for listening to Articulate Warbling. If you want to help the show, go to sweatdrenchedpress.com and buy some of Zach's books. Check out his writings, rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast, Articulate Warbling, on Apple, Stitcher, and anywhere else that you find podcasts. Podbean is where it's the RSS feed comes out of. And yeah, so you can always subscribe to it there, and you will get it first before you get it anywhere else. Especially pgttcm.com, where the back catalog of the show is housed. And you can always check out the older ones whenever DB gets off of his duff and uploads them. Let's see, what else? Yes, rate, review, and subscribe. As I said before, it helps the show. It helps the show grow. It helps us. And people find out about the show. And that's one thing I want people to find out about is Zach and Laura. Laura and Zach. It's a fun show. Thank you again, and stay safe, stay clean, be nice to one another, and I don't know, don't be an asshole. Next episode of Zach and Laura with Articulate Warbling should be coming up pretty soon, so stay tuned for that. And thank you for listening so much.